This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs. My name is Gareth Armstrong. It's good to be with you. Yes, we're live. It's another Thursday afternoon and another Future CEOs conversation with Joel. Are we allowed to call you a bigwig?
I think we're all bigwigs in our own world, aren't we?
We certainly are. But you're a bigwig from a interesting world, which is, of course, rugby and then moving into business. And we're going to talk about your journey today. Welcome to the Future CEO studio. It's good to have you here.
Kara, thanks very much. It's lovely to be here and nice to chat about two sort of parallel careers and lives. And I mean, that's really what you're alluding to is a past career in sport and obviously how it's sort of translated into where we are today.
And that's the voice of Joel Stransky. Many of you will remember that kick. I think I wonder how many times people bring that up with you. It's on a daily, weekly basis.
Well, you know, they say when people don't want to talk about it, you're out of mind and long forgotten. Mm. So as long as people are talking about it, it's a great privilege.
And so the kick that we're referring to, of course, is 95 World Cup, that wonderful game against the All Blacks. Joel Stransky, with the ball in hand, decides to win the game for us. So thank you for doing that.
It's really my pleasure.
Absolutely. So remember, if you can say, yes, I'm a future CEO, then this is the show for you. You may be sitting in a cubicle somewhere wanting to go into that corner office upstairs, you know, that one with the great view. Well, then this is the show for you if that's your aspiration. You may also be owning your own business and want to fast track its growth, expedite it. Well, then this is the show for you. We bring interesting individuals into studio to talk to them about their journeys and how they did what they do. Joel is one of those. We're very grateful to have you. Let's kick off very, very quickly. And I think for me, the elephant in the room question is, how in the world did you go from sporting hero to owning your own business and?
Well, it started, you know, when you finish playing sport, and in fact, we've built one of our businesses on this exact question. When you finish playing sport, you've got a decision to make, don't you? You've got to decide on a future career. You've got to decide where you're going to go, what it's going to be in. And for many sports people, personalities, you know, men and women, the natural step is to try and in some way remain involved in that sport because it is a passion. It's, you know, it's somewhere deep down inside. It's part of your DNA. It's part of your makeup. And initially, I took that journey. When I was still playing, I became player coach and I coached a bit. And then I got injured and couldn't play anymore and carried on coaching. And at some point in that little coaching, that short spell of coaching, I realized, you know, maybe coaching wasn't for me. Mm. Really cutthroat. They say there's two types of coaches, those who've been fired and those waiting to be fired. And,
okay, really.
And I just had a little bad experience, really, and decided that I didn't want to be a full-time coach. I didn't want to have my income, my family's future dependent on a career where it was as volatile as it was. So we came back to South Africa and looked for some opportunities and ended up getting involved in the world of business.
Okay. Did you study business previously? Was it happenstance that it started to move in that direction?
Well, so that is one of my regrets in life. I was doing a BCom at the University of Natal and didn't finish it because I embarked on this journey of playing professional rugby. And, you know, it came with its own set of great values and I achieved more than I could ever have dreamed of achieving on the sports field. So probably the right decision. But if there was one thing I definitely should have done, I should have finished my degree. So I did have a little bit of a background, but probably not as much as it should have been.
Well, I mean, I look out into the world and I look at so many different business leaders, and some of them are qualified, some of them aren't, some of them are CAs, some of them have a standard three or standard, you know, they're dropouts.
Yeah.
And so there's this diversity in business that, I mean, certainly stands you in good stead no matter who you really are.
Well, I think Richard Branson was one of those,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Exactly.
And I mean, I'd love to have as much cash as he's got, wouldn't we all? But it is, and a lot of those billionaires are real entrepreneurial types who've made their money out of thinking differently, thinking out the box, thinking laterally, and putting their dependence on the detail in the hands of the right people who do have those degrees, who can go and help them make it happen. but it's their relationships and it's their ability to think differently that's got them where they are.
Well, let's go into your journey a little bit. So you did speak about then leaving professional rugby, moving into this coaching where you kind of felt like it wasn't really for you. Then you started to evolve again. Talk to us a little bit about that evolution. How did that begin to take shape?
Well, I don't think it's a steadfast process. And for me, it was a little bit of trial and error. I got involved in a property development business and more so on the sales and the marketing side. You know, there wasn't quite a perfect fit. So I left. And then at that point, probably the best thing in, that could have happened to me happened. George Rotenbach from MegaPro approached me and I'd met him a few times and we became really good mates and I went to work for him in the world of commercial sport. And so the great thing for me was I learned a huge amount about business in that world where, you know, my heart still lay. It was very much around the commercial rights of South African rugby. It was around assisting Ian Riley in certain elements of the bid book for the 2010 Soccer World Cup. It was Cricket World Cup hospitality. There was just so many, you know, those little strings in sport that were created variation firstly, which is someone like me, I'm a little ADD and I need that variation to keep me inspired and keep me motivated. But most importantly, it gave me a great insight into relationship building, into the commercial side of sport, into the real economics, the accounting side. And that's really, that was my first step into sport. And I grew in that role tremendously. George was an unbelievable mentor for me. And you know, at some point, the journey comes to that point where someone who's driven and independent and wanting to be CEO of his future, you know, also stepped away and became a little entrepreneurial. But that was, for me, the groundwork and where all the hard yards were done.
So I want to ask two questions here. One is on the confidence side, which a senior executive at ABSA, in an interview with him once, he described it as his crisis of confidence. When he moves into an arena where previously he knew exactly what he needed to do to get a particular kind of outcome, then he moves into another area and suddenly it's a whole different language. I'd like to hear about your experience with this crisis of confidence. Did you experience that?
So I didn't experience it then.
Okay.
I have experienced it. And in fact, I think just like we talk about many rugby players being confidence players, I think business is about confidence as well, which is to your point. But I've found that step into the entrepreneurial space, I found it a little easier than maybe someone who looked like the guy you spoke to found. I found it quite inspiring in many ways to be, you know, to have your fate and destiny in your own hands, to be in charge of your future, to be doing everything you can for you and a business partner, as opposed to be working for someone else or a corporate. And MegaPro at that time was part of the Prime Media Group, so it was very corporate-y. So I found it quite enlightening. I did suffer at some point from a proper confidence dent.
Okay.
I went from, you know, that entrepreneurial space. I was approached and joined the LTech Group, and I became sales and marketing director of LTech NetStar, and then became the CEO or the MD, the group MD. And then I left and went to Steinhoff, and Steinhoff put me in a position then promptly sold that business, and I didn't get on with the new management, and they got rid of me.
Okay.
You know, so that for me was a huge failure to have someone say to me, listen, you don't fit in and you don't toe the party line and you're out. And you know, in the space of 24 hours to be really, you know, diving in head first and very shortly after to be chucked out the door. That is a proper confidence, knock. And
so a bit of a right hook.
A right hook to the solar plexus and I think below that as well.
Exactly.
But, you know, life is about these little knockdowns. Life is about getting knocked down. You can't always be on top. You can't always be winning. You lose the odd game, you lose the odd battle, and you get up and you go again.
And I really want to be able to ask some of those questions to you in just a moment. I do want you to talk for a moment to the young sportsmen and women that are out there who are listening to this, but where, and I don't know if this happens all the time, but it does seem to happen. Often you are pulled into a position, and Kluby, who unfortunately isn't here today, my co-host, is also experiences this in her own way because of the celebrity status that she occupies, where you're pulled into a front of product kind of role. You're a sales individual. People let you in the room. Why? Because you've got the big name and this background. Your experience on that?
Well, so
is it negative?
No, it's definitely not negative. It's hugely positive because, it, as you quite rightly point out, it gets you in the room. Mm. You know, and I think there's a lot of people out there who have similar roles where they can bang the doors down and they don't necessarily get the door opened. Mm. But I think if you come with a name from international sport or celebrity status like Shlubi, and it's a real shame she's not here because I do adore Shlubi. Mm. She's, you know, we've known each other for a long time and she's a wonderful lady, and you can tell I'm a little angry that she's not here today.
Oh, she's listening.
Yeah, good, good. Where are you? But the critical thing is, if you've got a name and you've achieved something in sport or you have that celebrity status, it gets you in the door. But getting in the door isn't enough to do a deal. You know, it opens the door. What you've got to do is you've got to go in with a value proposition that makes total sense, because businessmen and decision makers won't buy something because they think you're a lucky oak. Mm. They're going to buy something because it's the right decision for their business. Mm. So you still have to find a way to motivate that and position it in such a way that it is the right decision for them.
Well, we're constantly talking, when we talk to younger aspirational future CEOs, we talk to them and we try and help them understand that it's not enough to create a facade. You really have to have that substance behind you, and I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah. So it's not just about the substance, it's about positioning. For me, I always think about who I buy from, why I buy, and when we do invest and we do make those decisions, it's because it makes sense for our business. It's because it creates value in some way. So I always try to put myself in the person's shoes who I'm selling to, who we're positioning our solutions with, and try and find a way to give them a business case where it makes absolutely perfect sense and it's a no-brainer. And I think that's probably the lesson for those out there who are getting in the door. You know, make it work for the person you're presenting to as opposed to yourself.
Do you have an experience that you can share where it just all went wrong? So the thing is, someone like you, people perceive you in a particular kind of way as never making mistakes, although you've shared that there have been
There's been plenty.
So share one that is memorable. Well, that really taught you something.
So I mean, if I just go back to first in my MegaPro days, you know, when MegaPro and the sports market is about saying to, I don't know, an SA Rugby, let's use SA Rugby. Mm. And it's a good example because right now they are doing things really well. Mm. They've just signed up a new sponsor on the back of their shirt. I understand they're about to, you know, announce a new vehicle sponsor. So things are going well. And to be quite frank, the team are at the bottom of the pile at the moment. They're not in that great space.
Not performing great, yeah.
So as much as there are great signs and there's, you know, maybe a good future ahead, it's probably not a good time, or it's the perfect time if you position things right for a sponsor to get involved. Mm. So I mean, I remember trying to pitch certain of the SA Rugby brands, and in particular the Bulls. So understand, when in 2002, 2003, round about that era, if I remember correctly, the Bulls had lost 12 or 13 games in a row. There was one Super Rugby season they didn't win a game. They were sponsorless, and we eventually managed to get them a sponsor. But I banged on every single door. Every single sponsor said, look, you know, we think the Bulls might come right, but we don't want to associate our brand with a bunch of losers.
So
there were huge failures. Eventually, I got someone to agree that if the Bulls won their next game, they would sponsor them.
So a bit of a bet.
Exactly. It was a proper bet. And then we incentivize them to say, if they win 3 games this season, the sponsorship fee is X. If they win 6 games, it's 2X.
Okay,
if they, so we really incentivize the Bulls to, you know, to start winning. And 3 or 4 years later, they won the Super Rugby competition. Mm. So for that sponsor, it was a perfect time to get involved. And I think ultimately, they sold on the sponsorship from the front of the jersey, took a small sponsorship on the back, made a profit out of their sponsorship, and were associated with one of the great rugby stories.
Yeah, no, exactly. It really does sound like get in low, sell high.
Well, that's what's happening right now, isn't it? It's the key. It's about positioning your solution that it makes perfect sense.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about where you are right now.
Yeah.
The brand is called Pivotal.
So our group is the Pivotal Group, yeah.
And just give us a quick 30-second elevator pitch.
The elevator pitch. Okay, we're a disruptive technology business. We started in the voice biometric space, voice authentication. OneVault was our first company. We had a small investment in a company called Red Tree Capital, which was our second investment, and that's really asset finance and rental, and that business is still going and still operates out of our offices today. Really good bunch of guys. We then, through the OneVault journey, we started, you know, pitching to a lot of the call centers around voice authentication, and that voice authentication product has now finally taken traction after 6 years and is being rolled out.
6 years.
Wow. Slow adoption process. Mm. Bear in mind as well that there was a bit of a financial crisis through that time, and you know, a big slowdown. We through the call center, I'll call it that. We met some guys, and as a result, we started building and managing call centers, mainly the technology side, but also the infrastructure. That's a company called Pivotal Data that we own. We inside Pivotal Data, we've now built our own hosted telephony platform, fully hosted, wonderful solution. It's got everything integrated into the solution, everything you can imagine, including the voice authentication. To cut a real long story short, we've got quite a few other businesses in there in the health space. Online medical consulting is a new business we've just started, Medici. And now we've just recently really, I think, perfected the art of talent management through a company called Pivotal Talent.
Yeah, so there's an AI component to this talent thing. But I'm fascinated, before we go into in these kind of intricacies, how did this all begin? Where did the Pivotal thing happen for you? And tell us about that experience, please.
So I mean, I got my first taste of the technology game when I ran the Eltec Netstar group of companies. And I think you, as much as that was technology in the vehicle tracking, the truck driver management process, you understand at that point how big technology is going to go, and there was no mention of artificial intelligence around that time, but certainly technology was the future. And so, you know, when I joined Steinhoff and things didn't go so well in when they traded, you know, inside the group, the obvious step out was back towards technology, and I happened to have become quite friendly with one of my partners, Paul Hutton, and we were talking about this voice space and voice biometrics, and it just seemed a natural progression, real opportunity, real forward-thinking technology, really disruptive, and most importantly, and as much as it's taken us 5 or 6 years to really get some traction in the market, the process, the efficiencies it would create, the way it would change the way businesses did business telephonically, it seemed like a great idea at the time. I'll tell you right now, 2 years ago, it seemed like a really bad idea because we were battling to get it rolled out.
Sure.
And it's been a long, hard journey. But today, when I look back, we made the right decisions, as much as the journey has been arduous and tough. And we're at a point now where we are really positioned well to go forward.
So tell us then, what is the biggest mistake that you've made? And we'll exclude everything before entrepreneurship. Yeah. Tell us about the entrepreneurial biggest mistake that you've made so far. And perhaps, what did it teach you?
So I don't think there's one mistake. I think probably there are lessons that I've learned.
Okay.
In the last 5 or 6 years, I think, you know, and we didn't really chat about Pivotal Talent. It's around the people.
Mm.
The thing that we've probably got right in many ways and wrong every now and then is the people.
Mm.
We've appointed one or two people that haven't been successful inside our organization. And I look back on those and I think, why weren't they successful? Did we appoint the wrong people, or did we not manage them in the way they needed to be managed? That's probably
two good questions.
Where our mistakes came was maybe around some of the people we appointed. But some of the great success stories are the other people we've appointed who've become hugely successful inside our organization and have contributed enormously in terms of the value they add.
So I am interested in this because, of course, being in the future CEO space, we're approached by different organizations and we talk about different things and we do various things. This idea of AI, the ability to measure pre-appointment. Just tell me what this actually is. I'm not so interested in the sales talk as I actually am in how do you actually measure it.
So I mean, there's a very interesting debate going on right now, just around AI to start with. Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk having a huge, you know, public conference or debate around the future of AI. AI is quite misleading in many ways, and I think to Elon Musk's point, if AI does become a real de facto solution day to day, human beings' jobs are under proper threat because it has the ability to do everything that we as human beings do already.
Right. And more.
It's
a scary prospect.
It is a scary prospect. So our solution is probably more about augmented intelligence, which is really the human and artificial intelligence combined. So we certainly don't advocate that we get rid of the human element completely because I think it's a huge part of the process. How the solution works is really about trying to understand an individual better than them, better than their mom and dad know them, so that when we do give them career guidance advice, or we do understand who they are, what they are, in terms of where they should be best positioned in the recruitment space or in the talent management space inside an organization, we are then able, understanding and knowing who that person is, and obviously there's a bit more because we understand by a little bit of pre-consulting, the culture of the business, the KPIs, those elements, we are able to screen, match, and rank them in a role absolutely perfectly.
Okay, but how? I mean, how intrusive is this process? Because that's kind of what I'm thinking. You really have to know some serious things about me in order to know me better than my parents do.
So I mean, people have been doing it for a long time, but they've been doing it in just different segments or different pillars of the behavioral sciences. I mean, psychometry has been out there for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, there's other the neurosciences, industrial psychology, team dynamics. You can go on. There's loads of the different sciences, but each one of those dives quite deep in its own pillar, as opposed to working in a multidisciplinary way.
Okay.
Our system works in a multidisciplinary way. We do have, in this country, we have a skills test. In other parts of the world, we call it an assessment, because in this country we can't use psychometrics till we've interviewed the candidate, and our solution is designed to be right up front in the process as opposed to right at the end.
Okay.
So it is multidisciplinary. It takes into account everything you can imagine about the individual. And, I think once you've been through the process, it's not as intrusive as you might imagine it to be. It's very thorough, very helpful. And as I said, we like to think it's the most accurate solution in the world at the moment, by the way, because for us it's the only AI solution that is multidisciplinary.
So what would your solution say about you?
I've been through it, so I know exactly what it says about me. So it's quite interesting. I'm an introvert. I now understand fully what I'm good at, what I'm not good at, the roles I need to play, where I'm short on some of those skills as a leader in our business. I need to pass them on to people who are good at those things, so that we cover all the bases. And that's why we have partners. You know, that's why there's four of us who are shareholders in the main group. And why in every single one of our businesses, we have, where there's someone running that group, they have a stake. The person who runs the business has a share in the business, because that's, you know, it makes perfect sense that they're incentivized the same way we are. I know who I am. I know what I'm good at, what I'm not good at. I know our culture. I know how I fit inside our culture. I know what makes me tick and what makes me properly irritated, you know. So it's also for me nice to see that report, because I understand how to manage me, let alone how someone else would manage me or how I would be able to manage myself going forward in a career.
Well, can you believe that we've almost run out of time?
You're kidding. Is that half an hour already?
It's almost
half an
hour.
And no Shluby. Imagine if Shluby had been here.
Exactly. So let's ask you the question that we ask everyone before we let them out of the studio. And that is, if you could go back in time and talk to the young 20-year-old future CEO you, what would you say to yourself?
Well, firstly, on a personal note, I would say make sure you finish your degree. Make sure you get your studies behind you. I think competition for CEO positions out there is very tough at the moment. There's not a lot of top-end positions, and we have a recruitment business as well, so I know there's a lot of guys looking for work. So make sure you are well-degreed, get your studies behind you. And if you are going to go down the route of being entrepreneurial, the one thing I would say is, you know, we often look at the businesses and we talk about profit and loss. We don't always talk about cash flow. I think cash flow is probably of paramount importance, you know, to fund the business correctly, and don't make the stingy decisions up front. You know, invest in the future in a way that makes perfect sense to capitalize that business, that you have a chance of making it work. Most businesses don't go under because they're not profitable. They go under because the cash flow is an issue.
Exactly. Well, Joel Stransky, Pivotal Group, am I getting that right?
That's 100% right.
And thank you so very, very much for being here. We really appreciate it. If people do want to find out more, they go
pivotalgroup.co.za they can just Google us. We're out there.
Okay, good. Thank you so very much. Thank you for sharing your journey with us. We really appreciate it. We're going to have you back when Tlubi's around. And then when we have you back, I will share with our listeners my first real encounter with you, which was at the Google offices, and you made a joke under your breath, and I'll never forget that joke, but we'll wait.
Oh, jeez. I hope it wasn't derogatory in any way.
No, it was classic. That's what it was. I chuckled. But thank you, Joel. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
All right. After the break, we are going to be talking sexual harassment in the workplace. I think this is I think it's ignored, or it is overlooked, it isn't given enough airtime, and so we're going to be doing that right after the break.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.